I'll try to share our experience in designing and implementing this deployable multipath TCP with you today. So why do we want to do this in the first place? And the reason is the networks are becoming multipath more and more. So we've got mobile devices that have multiple wireless interfaces, each of them with different coverage, different properties such as throughput, latency, and even energy consumption. So if you want to get a good mobile experience from the network, what you really want is to be able to somehow combine the properties of all of these. And we can't really do that today really well. Another example is data centers, where we've got tons of servers in racks. And if you actually look at what these racks use for networking, you've got normally one or more top of the rack switches, and each server will be connected into this. And the top of rack switches actually have multiple uplinks towards core switches. And what you get is a topology where you have multiple paths between any pair of switches not residing in the same rack. Finally, content providers, they've used multi-homing for ages now, you know, using two uplinks to different to two ISPs to get better robustness and better performance. And, you know, meanwhile, we're still using TCP. By most of these applications, as John was saying yesterday, you know, they use TCP because it's so nice. You know, you get nice, reliable delivery, byte-oriented, and you get congestion control. You know, you match TCP matches load to the network conditions. And, you know, this is ubiquitous. It's difficult to deploy in transports. The trouble with TCP is that it's single path. Okay, so a single TCP connection can only sit on one path in the network. And that's sort of a fundamental problem with TCP. And on top of that, TCP ties the connection to the endpoints, to the endpoint addresses. So if any of those addresses change, then basically the connection has to die. Right, so there's a fundamental mismatch between multipath networks that are sort of booming all around us and single path transport that seems to be stuck. And that's why we actually started a while ago and looking into how we can evolve TCP and make it multipath. But here's a problem. So I mentioned a lot of problems. Here's just one example problem that we might be getting if you have single path transport and multipath networks. So in a data center, what we have here is a fat tree network. And we have two red servers that want to communicate. And when they open a TCP connection, the connection will typically be placed on a random path by something like equal cost multipath. Now, this is all nice. The connection is getting max throughput, except that if you have another connection, that connection may happen to be placed randomly. And it will share a link with this existing connection. And what you get is underutilized network and poor performance for these two flows, while the rest of the network is completely idle. And that's not what you want. OK, so here's what we did. And here's the title of our paper. And it actually describes pretty well the outline of this talk, except that I'll do it in a different order. So the goal is to get a deployable multipath TCP. So what does that mean? Well, what we really want is to somehow enable most of these applications to get the benefits of multipath networks. And since most applications use TCP, that means if you want to enable these to use multipath, what you have to do is to work below the sockets API and make the applications believe that they're still dealing with regular TCP, right? The second goal is we want to work on today's networks. We don't want to change to require changes to network hardware because that's a showstopper for deployment, so that's not going to be deployable. And third, you definitely want to work when TCP would work, okay? So if TCP does get through a path today and you deploy multipath and all of a sudden that path is not working anymore, that's not acceptable. So whenever TCP would work, multipath TCP should better work or otherwise it's not going to be deployable. I'm happy to say that we've got a Linux kernel implementation of our protocol. It does support legacy apps and we've tested this and deployed 3G Wi-Fi networks in data centers and the internet at large and it does work, but I'm just getting a bit ahead of myself. I'm sure you're dying to hear the answer to this one. How hard can it be? Well, it can be pretty hard. So let me start with a bit of history. So I was a student at UCL in 2007. So Mark Handley walks up to me and says, you know, I've heard of this really cool theory working congestion control. But before we actually start doing that, we need a protocol, right? We need a multipath protocol. So why don't we start looking into this? You know, why don't we start working on this? And when he came there, we had this feeling that, you know, this will be done in a few months, and then we can focus on the really cool stuff. Well, here we are. 5 years later, you know, many IETF meetings and many back to the drawing board moments, and we finally nailed this. So the working group at the IETF is finally reach the consensus, the protocol is moving towards becoming an RFC. So why the hell did it take this long? It turns out the reason it took this long is because nobody really understands what the internet architecture looks like anymore, right? It's really a moving thing. It's evolving so much, nobody really knows. This is what we teach to our students in Networking 101, right? So we've got layers, we got link layer, and you have addresses here that are only local to the link, and then you have IP. And the routers, they look at the destination address to forward the packet from the source to destination, but they don't really touch the packet in any way. And then you have TCP at the endpoints that does retransmission and reliable delivery, and that's all very nice, except, well, it's fiction. Well, mostly. So, and this is, like Jana was saying before, this is because of middlebox, and I'll use this nice skull in the rest of my talk to denote a middlebox. All right, what do middleboxes really do? Okay, so here's an IP packet with the two headers and some data at the bottom there. So in theory, in an end-to-end internet, the TTL field and the header checksum would change as the packet gets forwarded towards the destination, but nothing else. In practice, we know there are nets, so basically the source and the IP and port should change, and on the way back, the destination port and IP would change, so we know that these will be changed, right? Well, it turns out that some firewalls, they randomize the initial sequence number because it's not random enough coming from the host, so they also change the sequence number and acknowledgement numbers, and if you keep doing this, what you have is basically this. So, I mean, there are some white spots in there, but they're not very interesting. Okay, so now you understand why it was difficult and how hard it was. Now, let me tell a bit about the design. So, what came out of this effort. So what we have is a client on the left and the server on the right, and they have multiple paths, and how do you actually enable multipath TCP? So since we must be compatible to TCP, we have to use the TCP negotiation mechanism, and that is you send a SYN packet, you start a connection the same way regular TCP does, except you put a new option inside, and that option is an NP-capable option. Now, the server, the logic of the server says, if the SYN has NP-capable, then we enable multipath TCP for this connection, and we respond with a SYN ACK with NP-capable in, and at this point, we consider that the connection is doing multipath. The client has similar logic and says, if the SYN ACK has NP-capable, then we're doing multipath and we're all good. So now we have set up a subflow in this multipath flow, and each of the endpoints, we remember that it has a multipath flow and it has one subflow for that connection. Now, if you want to open another subflow because you got a new IP address, you send a SYN but with a different option, join, and what this tells the server is that this is part of an existing connection, right? The server replies, and then finally you have a new subflow set up, and you can add as many subflows as you want, and you can kill subflows individually by finning them the regular TCP way, and this works all very nice. Now, that was easy, no? Almost too easy. So, let's think a little bit. What would happen if the forward path, everything was fine, the SYN got there with the NP-capable, but on the backward path, you have this nice middle box. So, we actually didn't ask this question in abstract, we actually went and measured. So we ran a study of around 150 access networks, and this was published in IMC last year. So what we found is that a sizable fraction of these, 6 to 14%, they will remove unknown options from SYNs or data packets. Okay, so what could happen in this case is that the middlebox strips the NP-capable from the SYN ACK, and the client now thinks that multipath TCP is disabled while the server thinks multipath TCP is enabled. And what happens after this gets really complicated, right? But this is not good. So, it turns out it's very easy to fix this. What you want to do is make sure that in the third ACK of the handshake, you have an option that also is related to multipath TCP. And the logic of the server changes and says, if the SYN has multipath capable and the third ACK has this data ACK, then you enable multipath. And in this particular case, the third ACK will not carry the multipath option, so the two endpoints are in agreement and the negotiation works. Okay. So what we've just seen is what we had to do to achieve this goal three. Like if TCP does get through, multipath TCP better get through, right? So we had to fall back to TCP. Because multipath TCP is not possible. And we don't do this just at the beginning of the connection. Multipath TCP will fall back to TCP even if it detects something wrong in the middle of the connection, right? It can happen all the time to fall back. But I will not discuss about that further. So here's a lesson we learned that I would like to share with you. It used to be that if you negotiated new things, you just have two endpoints. In today's internet, you have negotiation between two endpoints and an unknown number of intermediaries. And unless your negotiation takes that into account, it will fail. Okay. So let's move on to the next part of multipath operation, and that is sending data. So just a brief reminder of how TCP works. So you've got packets. The TCP maintains a window of packets in flight at any time. Each packet has a sequence number. In this case, I'm showing packet sequence number because it's easier. So say the server has sent four packets. Now, the client looks at the sequence numbers and it can tell what order it should pass the packet, the data to the application, right? It allows it to avoid sending duplicate data and so forth. Now, the client generates X, the server uses these X to resend missing packets and so forth. I mean, you all know this, but it's just, okay, so one strawman way to design multipath is basically take each segment and put it on a different path. So I take segment one and put it on the top path. But, you know, to make this interesting, we need some middle boxes, right? So I take segment two and put it on the bottom path, and so forth. Okay, so what's happening now? On the top path, we have segments one and three, and there's a hole in the middle, right? On the bottom path, again, we have a hole. So we have, on each path, we have something that looks like a TCP connection with holes in the sequence space. Now, as the acts get generated, it turns out this is when the problem arises. So it turns out that a third of access networks will correct or drop acts for unseen data. So if they see an act covering data they have not seen yet, they will just correct the act or just drop it. In a few cases, they kill the connection, right? So what happens in this particular case? Well, act two on the bottom path will be corrected to act zero. On the top path, act three will be corrected to act one, and act four again will be corrected to act zero. So we're stuck now, right? The acts are not getting through. The server, the client doesn't know which data got there, and so the protocol is just not working. So what does work? Well, it turns out we need a separate sequence space for every subflow, right? Every subflow should look like a regular TCP connection. And this is actually very nice because it allows you to do on each path very accurate loss detection and retransmission. So you can, each of the subflows is basically like a single path TCP doing fast retransmit and so forth. Now, we still need the data sequence number, which will be used by the receiver to reorder packets as they're coming from the different paths and pass them to the application. Now, multipath TCP uses a single receive buffer for the whole connection, and to signal the availability of this receive buffer and to do flow control, we need a data ACK, okay? So how does this look on the wire? So whenever you want to send a segment, say segment one, this will be basically the data sequence number, right? If you want to put it on the top path, you assign a subflow sequence number, in this case 100, and you send it, okay? The second segment goes on the bottom path. This gets us a blue sequence number, in this case 200. And finally, we send the third segment on the top path. Okay, so what's going on here is that on the top path, we use the subflow sequence numbers to figure out when packets get lost and so forth, and the same for the bottom path. Now, what happens if this packet gets lost, or rather, if this path fails? Well, we'll get a timeout on the blue path, and we can re-inject this segment on the red path, right? So it's the same data sequence number as we had before, but with a new subflow sequence number. Okay, so I hope that gives you an idea of how this thing is working. So here's the packet header. Here's what we started out with. Now, a lot of these fields, they will be used to signal the subflow information, like the port, sequence number, acknowledgement number. I just said that the multipath TCP has a single receive window, a single receive buffer per connection. So basically, this receive window is used to signal the connection level receive window, and it's actually relative to the data ACK. So one thing that's missing from this explanation is where we encode this new control information. So we've got basically two pieces of information, the data sequence number and the data ACK. And there are two options. Either send them as new TCP options or send them in the payload. And before I show you the slide, I'll say that at the IETF, you know, it took like 6 months to solve this dispute and people were getting philosophical and, you know, there was no real answer. So my view on that is that sending data acts in the payload sucks. Actually, to be more academic, it leads to deadlocks. So let me tell you how that unfolds. Okay, so we've got a client and a server, and the client makes a request, and the server reads the request and sends a response back. So the client is pipelining requests, much like HTTP 1.1, and the server is reading the requests one by one and sending the responses back. And this is all fine. You know, I mean, this is what the application was programmed to. Okay, so what happens if you use multipath TCP with data ACK put in the payload? So the client again sends a request, the server reads the request, starts sending the request back, but he may be blocked by the receive buffer available on the client, so basically the server application will block in the send call. Now the client is pipelining requests in the meantime, and it will also fill up the server receive buffer, and at this point the client will not send anymore. But the client is asynchronous, so it basically sees now that it has some data it would like to read, so it can actually go and read this data, okay? Now, what's happened is that by reading the data, the receive window is emptied, and at this point you need to send back the data ACK, okay? That will tell the server, yeah, you can send more data. But the trouble is the data ACK is put in the payload, and the server's receive buffer is full. So the client is blocked trying to send data to the server, and the server is blocked trying to send data to the client, and there's no way out. So we basically get a deadlock. Okay, so I'll finish the discussion of the design of multipath TCP by saying that from what looked to be like a hugely open space of design decisions and, you know, design possibilities, it turned out that the real or usable decisions or usable features in multipath TCP, the space was actually very, very narrow. It turns out that we could only We had really no choice in many cases, right? So I'd like to point you to the paper for more details about flow control and how we deal with content modifier middle boxes. You know what happens if the length changes on the different segments and so forth. But now I'd like to tell you a little bit about what we had to implement or the challenges we faced when implementing multipath TCP. And I'll drive this with an example. So we have here a multipath TCP connection running over Wi-Fi and 3G. Wi-Fi is much faster, small RTT. 3G is slow and high RTT. Okay, so this is a real experiment. So what I'm showing here is I'm varying the receive buffer size, and I'm showing a bandwidth you get on 3G and bandwidth you get on Wi-Fi. So over 3G you get 2 megabits. Over Wi-Fi you get 8 megabits. Now, multipath TCP gets this curve. So what's happening here? Well, to the right, if you have 1.5 megabytes of receive buffer or more, you basically get what you hope for. You know, multipath TCP will give you more throughput. It'll give you the sum of bandwidth of 3G and Wi-Fi. But here, you know, what's happening here? We're getting less throughput than TCP for low values of the receive buffer. And, you know, this is not an unlikely case. If your client is a mobile phone, it doesn't have memory, you know, this is where you may be. So what's going on here? Well, let me show you an example of what's going on. So say the client has sent segment number one on the slow 3G path, okay? And it sends three more segments on the fast Wi-Fi path, and this going to the receive window, but of course the receive window has a hole in it, and as Jana told you earlier, regular TCP will not pass this data up to the application. Now, the X will come back on the Wi-Fi path, but the client cannot send more data, or rather, the server cannot send more data on this path because it's blocked by a receive window. So this is bad because we have stalled the Wi-Fi path because we're using this slow 3G path, and that's not good. So what can we do? Well, the solution is really obvious. Why don't we take this segment that is holding the trailing edge of the receive window, in this case, it's segment one, and re-inject it on Wi-Fi, okay? And the hope is that the segment will get there quickly enough that it fills the hole in the receive window and the transfer can go on. Now, while doing so, we're actually burning a bit of bandwidth. And if we did this for all the segments we sent on 3G, that would actually have a lot of wasted bandwidth. So what we also do is halve the congestion window on the 3G subflow. And the hope here is that a lot of the RTT on the 3G subflow is due to buffer bloat. And if you halve the congestion window, you basically reduce the number of packets you have in the buffer. Okay, this turns out to work. So what will happen is, you know, the hole is filled, the application reads the data, and everything is fine. So this turns out to work actually pretty well. So multipath TCP shown here in the black line, optimized for this receive buffer issue, will give you the throughput if you are willing to spend the memory. If you don't have memory to spend, then you'll basically get at least as much as TCP was getting, and this is the behavior we like. Okay, so let me just quickly do a quick demo now. So what we have here is basically a host running multipath TCP having three interfaces. The charts on the right show you the throughput on each of the interfaces. So the top interface is Ethernet, the middle one is Wi-Fi, and the bottom one is 3G. So what we're doing is we're running SSH with X-forwarding, so unmodified SSH over multipath TCP, to a server that we control. The server is also running multipath TCP. Okay, so we start a screensaver, and this is streamed over the multipath connection. Okay, and what you see is that all the traffic is going on Ethernet, and that's because when multipath TCP is application limited, it actually sends the data on the subflow that has the lowest RTT. In this case, it's Ethernet. Okay, so this is going on, and then at some point, we will disable Ethernet, right? Immediately, traffic shifts over to Wi-Fi because that's the next fastest interface, and you see that there's no disruption in the transfer whatsoever. But Wi-Fi doesn't have enough, so you'll see that there's a bit of traffic on 3G. That's when Wi-Fi doesn't have enough throughput, so some traffic is pushed on 3G. Finally, as you disable Wi-Fi, the connection moves over 3G, but here you have actually less bandwidth, and the video is getting a bit choppy. Finally, as we enable Internet again, everything starts using, multipath starts using the Ethernet interface, and we're back to square one. All right, so to conclude, I'll say that designing a multipath TCP isn't difficult at all, but designing a deployable multipath TCP is actually quite hard. You really need to understand the evolving and undocumented internet architecture, and you need to design defensive mechanisms to be able to fall back to TCP behavior when MPTCP doesn't work. And this does not apply just to TCP, to multipath TCP. Actually, we think most TCP extensions will face similar problems with us, and we hope they can learn some of the lessons we've learned the hard way. In the stack and in general, it turns out that to design something that performs well, you need to carefully manage your buffers and really, really understand the interactions. And what I showed earlier is a living example of that. And I'll conclude saying that multipath TCP allows unmodified applications to reap the benefits of multipath networks. It is deployable today, and please try out our Linux code. It's available at this address. And with that, I'll take questions. Thank you.
Vyas from Intel Labs. Maybe this is a dumb question. So multipath TCP, I see it makes sense in data centers, but then middle boxes are not a problem in data centers, as far as I know. You can run your thing without worrying about middle boxes. And this stuff in the real world where you actually care about middle boxes, it seems like you can just get whatever benefits you want with multiple connections. Why do you really need multipath TCP? I'd imagine the thing needs for things for like video or websites, but they run multiple connections with two different servers. And even things like the Wi-Fi 3G, I imagine it's really having two different IPs, it's like two different connections. Why do you really need multipath TCP in the real world?
So why do you need multipath TCP for mobile?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, in many cases, you don't...
Over multiple connections.
Or what?
Over just having separate connections, two separate TCP connections. What does having single TCP connection with multipath help me? In the real world...
Okay, so let me rephrase your question. You can modify applications to sort of use multiple paths if you really want it, right? The trouble is most applications don't do that today. Like, if you're listening to your internet radio, your Wi-Fi dies, there goes your internet radio, right? So you can definitely change every application, but that's going to take a lot of effort, and you're duplicating a lot of the code. What we also found, we have some results that we haven't shown in this talk. What we also found is that actually, when you do handover with multipath TCP, it behaves a lot better than handover at application level. But I can tell you about that offline. So
well, that seems orthogonal to the multipath.
Yeah.
Okay.
As for the data center, you sort of asked. I'm again rephrasing your question. You can tell me if I'm wrong. Could we have designed multipath TCP differently for the data center? And the answer is, in terms of wire format, it turns out that a lot of the wire format will be pretty much the same for data center and the internet. And that's because you still need multiple sequence spaces for the different subflows, because those give you the most accurate loss detection right? If you use a single sequence space, the loss detection is much, well, it's not perfect, basically. And what you end up doing is you're burning a bit of bandwidth to get that extra precision, and that's a worthwhile trade-off. So in short, I don't think we could have done much more, in trimming down. But of course, we haven't done that exercise, so it's an open question.
Thanks,
Jana Iyengar. Thanks, Kostin. This was actually quite a fun talk, and I think it's nice to see experience over a long period of time being distilled into a paper and a talk like that. So thank you. This was a question about one of the slides you had, which was about the deadlock situation. And I can't remember now, but is it the case that if you reserved some amount of the receive window on one side, is it easily fixable, or am I missing something? If you reserve some amount of receive window space at the sender just for sending data acts,
so actually
could you avoid the deadlock?
That was proposed before. You could have the protocol do that. Except that if you have a middle box that remembers how much receive window you advertise, the middle box might hold the sender to that receive window. So the middle box, even if the server is willing to accept the extra data that's outside the receive window if you wanted, then the middle box can still mess you up, right?
Right. I'm saying that the sender is an MPTCP sender, so it doesn't, the receive window, if it's advertised as 10, the sender uses only 9 of it for data. I'm not saying go beyond 10, but limit yourself to less than 10.
It's difficult to design sort of at the mic, but that might work. I mean, there are the issues with putting data X in the payload that are not related to correctness and they relate to performance, but
yeah,
that's different.
Yes.
That's a different thing. Yeah.
sorry. Nice work, and you. It's really interesting to see kind of the full complexity of this kind of thing come out. You alluded to an interesting problem that I wanted to hear a little bit more about, namely falling back to TCP behavior if something changes in the middle of the connection. Like, I assume it might be a case that some path reconfiguration in the network suddenly starts sending an existing subflow through a different firewall that starts scrubbing unknown options. Like, so what happens in that case? If you already have two subflows, does the one that starts getting scrubbed shut down, leaving the other functional,
You basically said it. So there are two cases. If one of the subflows starts misbehaving, like missing options would be one thing. The other thing would be, say someone changes its payload, rewrites the payload. There are middle boxes that do that. So once you detect that, if you have other working subflows, you just kill that subflow that's misbehaving. If that's your only subflow, what you basically do is you send, the client tells the server, from now on we're only doing TCP. And basically the server from now on just falls out of multipath TCP mode, uses, stops sending data sequence number, it uses just subflow sequence numbers and that's it. So it's a one-way transition. Once you're in TCP mode, you don't go back to multipath, that's it.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.